Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. During an extended artistic residency at Mass MoCA in North Adams, Massachusetts, Lucinda Childs, one of the most celebrated choreographers of the modern era, is reviving her seminal 1983 collaboration with John Adams and architect Frank Gehry, Available Light. This Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, Mass MoCA will present three work-in-progress showings of Available Light in the Hunter Center. First presented in a warehouse-style performance venue at the Los Angeles Museum of Contemporary Art in 1983, Available Light blends Lucinda Child's signature style of choreography with Frank Gehry's stunning two-story constructivist set and John Adams' original textured score, Light Over Water. We welcome Lucinda Childs to the roundtable this morning. What went into the decision to remount Available Light now?
Well, in the past 6-7 years, we've been working on other revivals. The first one was the revival of Dance, with music by Philip Glass and film decor by Saul LeWitt. The second was, of course, Einstein on the Beach, mm-hmm. the opera, Philip Glass and Robert Wilson opera. And we feel it's kind of an interesting time to work on these revivals because many of the people who want to see it now in this day and age weren't even born at the time of the creation of the work. And we just feel it's important to, especially with the performing arts, to have a chance to really see it in three dimensions and not just, you know, rely on videos. And in that particular day and age, the videos were really not of the same quality that they are now.
What do you learn as you remount one of your works? What do you bring to it, and what does it teach you as you revisit a piece that you did several years ago?
Well, I'm proud that I worked on notational scores because I find that the videos, in and of themselves, they give the information of the vocabulary, but they don't. It doesn't really. The structure is not really explained. The relationship of the dancers to each other, to the music, to the space. All of that is really clearly delineated in my scores. And so they, even at the time, I didn't necessarily think they would be used for revival. I used them as part of my working process, but they've been crucial in revival. And I feel very happy about that because I feel that these works could have a future, you know, without necessarily just relying on videos or just relying on people who remember them, who danced them before.
Can you try to explain to a complete novice, less than novice, somebody completely on out the outside of the dance world, what a dance notated score looks like? How do you make the notes on the score? What does that process involve?
Yeah, there are many different. There's a lab notation, and there's a Benesch method, which I don't use at all. Those are very, you know, sort of scientific, scholastic methods of recording movement. What I use is the equivalent of an overhead view of the dance, like a map of what's happening in the floor in terms of the floor pattern. It's not actually recording movement in terms of what happens physically in the body, but it's more the paths in space and the relationship of the dancers to the music and the paths in space, and frame by frame. It's almost like a storyboard, and it's been incredibly useful for me, especially remounting this piece.
I can imagine. How did you learn to do that or create that if you didn't learn it from somewhere else?
Well, there are some beautiful drawings in a book about Martha Graham. Each chapter starts with a drawing which is made by an artist who just sat out in the audience and traced how Martha Graham was moving in the space. You know, as if she had had, you know, if she had had paint on the bottom of her feet, for example, she would have left a trail. And these beautiful drawings sort of inspired me to think about that in terms of notating my own dances.
How did the collaboration on this piece with designer Frank Gehry and composer John Adams work when you originally did it, and is the collaboration different at all now?
Well, the Museum of Contemporary Art in Los Angeles commissioned the work. The curator at that time, Julie Lazar, had come to New York to see the dance, which was the Phil Glass-Saul LeWitt collaboration, mm-hmm. and wanted me to work with these two artists from the West Coast. Which, you know, it didn't matter which coast they came from as far as I was concerned, because they were both already, you know, for me, so famous. And mm-hmm. so wonderful to work with. And I think that the music is, of course, absolutely identical to, I don't know if John Adams has made any kind of a technical adjustment, but it's absolutely identical to what we had in 1983. And the set has been redesigned in collaboration with the Frank Gehry's office, but it's exactly the same dimensions. What's different is that there were two versions of the set. One was in the open temporary contemporary space in Los Angeles, and another version in the Opera House at BAM. And now we have one version, which is really the same thing, but just organized in such a way that it can fit into any space. And we're very, very happy with it, and very, very happy that we were able to mount it here in this residency.
And how did this residency at Mass MoCA come about?
Well, I think that it's critical for a company to have a period of time, sort of a preview period, to put a piece together, because the transition from the studio to the space, such as MoCA, makes it just a transition that really can go very, very smoothly. And I think it's really through my agent, Pomegranate, that they looked around. We had once had a residency at BART, where we have the Frank Gehry building, the Fisher building. Mm-hmm. And this came about as a possibility for the company.
After Mass MoCA, the piece will travel to a few places in the U.S., Los Angeles and Berkeley and Philadelphia, and then to France, Austria, and Greece. Will you need to rehearse again in each space, since it is such a set and space-specific work?
I think what we need mostly for the dancers, for their conditioning, because there are periods of time in between, which we always do with any kind of project like this, is to rehearse the piece in a regular studio space. They don't actually need the time in the physical space. That's sort of happening now. And once that's established, that's something that they can carry with them, that they don't really necessarily have to redo in the same way we did here, just in building the work.
For you, what is Available Light about? What story does it tell?
It doesn't tell any story at all, actually. It's completely abstract work. But the music of John Adams, even though he's considered to be in the minimalist tradition, I find has a lot of emotional coloring and very beautiful kind of atmosphere to it, which I tried to capture in the choreography. But I don't specifically give the dancers any kind of persona or identity. I want them to bring their own interpretations to the piece in terms of their presence and in terms of their projection.
And how do you encourage the dancers to do that?
By leaving them alone. By saying, you know, I don't try to copy, you know, something you saw someone else do on a video. And by now, having worked with me for so many years, some of them now six, seven years, mm-hmm. and having had the experience of not only dance but Einstein, where they're on stage for long periods of time performing non-dance material of, you know, of Robert Wilson, they've learned so much about stage presence and how to deal with that and how to make it something that's very, very real, that's in no way phony, you know, just really comes from them personally. And I'm very, very happy with that aspect of the dancer's work.
So when you approach something that does have story and persona, when you choreograph an opera, for instance, is your process very different, and if it is, how so, than when you create something like Available Light?
Well, for working in opera, most recently, it's been for the past 20 years, but I worked primarily as a choreographer, mm-hmm. Essentially as an abstract way, working just with the director and choreographing ensembles for various operas. And in more recent years, I've actually directed a number of operas, and I'm in the process of doing that. And working with singers is, of course, completely different from working with dancers. Mm-hmm. And I work in a very psychological way, you know, talking about why they have to be, where they have to be, and when they can be there, and what sort of thing is going on. You know, we have real discussions and interchanges. It's just very different from the work with the dancers.
What made you want to direct operas?
I think it is partly from, I think, being fortunate since the 70s to be in Europe, to see so many modern productions, and to be asked to work with different directors, not just Robert Wilson, also with some of the European directors, and to be offered that opportunity to work, to direct an opera on my own. It's just really a thrilling experience, and one that I think that early in my career I would not have wanted to accept. But after my 50 years working as a choreographer, as I say, in the past 20 years, I've found it a very exciting way, a new discovering for me.
And I imagine you've learned from and taken pieces of process from other directors you've worked with.
Yes, I think that there's a tremendous amount to be learned, and also that every production involves different personalities, different singers. And so everything is, you know, nothing is, there's no, I don't think there's any one system that you can rely on. I think you have to constantly create whatever is right for that particular situation or for those particular people.
How are the dancers that you've been working with, as you say, some of them for 6 or 7 years, they were in the revival of Einstein on the Beach and dance in this Available Light now. How are they selected? How do you choose the dancers that you will put in your productions?
We have open auditions, and that means completely open. But people can, of course, send in their resumes and sign in with my agent from Pomegranate. Linda Brumbach has made this whole thing possible. But I also try to leave it open so that, you know, someone just passing through New York who notices that there's an opening can come to the audition. And sometimes, you know, 100 people show up and we only have one or two positions open. But the first time around was completely new company in 2009.
And why open auditions? What do you hope to discover in dancers by leaving it open?
Because I don't think that a good dancer is chosen because they understand email and the internet. They may just be talking to a friend and say, oh, you know, they may even, you know, get a phone call the night before. And I just feel that, you know, some of the good people and the busy people might just be some of the people who will show up at the last minute. And that's totally fine with me. I'm always happy to see everyone.
Over the course of your career, you've collaborated with a number of people, as we've mentioned, of course, John Adams and Frank Gehry and Philip Glass, Robert Wilson and Solowit. How do you choose who you will collaborate with, and what has to happen in working with them that will make you want to work with them again?
Well, I saw Robert Wilson's work for the first time in 1974. It was called A Letter to Queen Victoria. It was one of his major productions, which was on Broadway, mm-hmm. which is kind of surprising to my group of artists, as we were mostly the downtown crowd in New York.
Right.
And I really didn't know what to expect, but I just was amazed at this sort of new theater. I hadn't seen anything like it. And a few months later, I met him, and he asked me to be part of Einstein. He didn't really know much about me, but I just, you know, immediately responded and said, yes, of course, I'd love to be part of your next work. So he chose me. I didn't really choose him. Mm-hmm. And then subsequently, we've worked together on a number of productions. And it was my first time to work with a composer because Phil Glass was part of the Einstein on the Beach. Up to that, I'd had a very small company, and we worked primarily what they call, you know, in silence in the 70s. There was no musical accompaniment of any kind.
Available Light will have 3 in-progress presentations in the Hunter Center at Mass MoCA this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. For more information, visit massmoca.org. Lucinda Childs, has been an honor speaking with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.